The occultic roots of the New World Disorder. I don't know how many people have heard of 1666 and the Sabbatean roots of the New World Disorder, or of Sabbatai Zevi, but tonight we're going to tell you something that is not just of historic interest, but which makes enormous sense. It helps us make sense of so much of what's going on in the world today that doesn't make sense otherwise. In 1666, Sabbatai Zevi declared himself to be the Messiah. More than half of the world's Jewish population at that time in the 17th century came to accept and follow Zevi as their Messiah. Sabbatai Zevi, who proclaimed salvation through sin, not salvation from sin, salvation through sin, was condemned as a heretic by many contemporary rabbis, and for good reason. Our Lord Jesus in Matthew 24 verse 4 said, "Take heed that no one deceives you." Matthew 24 verse 5, "For many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many." Matthew 24 verse 23, we read, "Then if anyone says to you, behold, here is the Christ, or there he is, do not believe him. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and will show great signs and wonders, so as to mislead, if possible, even the elect." Sabbatai Zevi was born the 1st of August 1626 in Anatolia, present-day Turkey. He was a Sephardic Jew, ordained a rabbi in Smyrna, what now is called İzmir in Turkey. Sabbatai Zevi was active throughout the Ottoman Turkish Empire, teaching from the Talmud and from the Kabbalah. Sabbatai Zevi's message of redemption through sin was enthusiastically received by many. You can imagine, just like today, people are thrilled to know that you can sin and get away with it, and you can be in the sense of God's will by indulging your worst debauched desires. So he got a lot of enthusiastic supporters. Fast days became feast days, and sexual promiscuity, adultery, incest, and orgies became mandatory. Zevi taught every law must be broken. Religious taboos such as eating pork, or not eating pork, I should say, and every form of sexual immorality was encouraged, not just permitted, encouraged. Sabbatai Zevi lived from 1626 to 1676, and he is described by his contemporaries as an exceptionally charismatic rabbi and Kabbalist, an eccentric mystic who attained a massive following of more than 1 million devotees during his lifetime. This was more than half all the Jews in the world at that time. The publication of the Lurianic Kabbalah made Zevi extraordinarily popular. He wasn't the author, but he was the fulfillment of so much of what the Kabbalah spoke about. And in the 17th century, amongst the Jewish people throughout Europe and Ottoman Empire, he became the most exciting focus of religious devotion. The Lurianic Kabbalah promoted an occultic, deeper meaning for Jewish mysticism, drawing from the ancient Babylonian occultism and numerology. Remember that the Jews were in Babylon for a good 70 years, and many stayed there much longer, and as a result, they were right in the heart of Babylon, and so much of what's in the Talmud and the Kabbalah looks like more Babylonian mysticism and occultism than anything to do with the Old Testament, that's for sure. Sabbatai Zevi emphasized the magical, supernatural relationship between events and time through letters and through numbers. There's an occultic power of dates and numbers. The numerological value of dates contributed greatly to the widely held expectations and hopes of the Jewish Messiah to arrive on the 18th day, that's 6 plus 6 plus 6, of the 6th month of the year 1666. One eyewitness, Rabbi Leib ben Ozza, wrote that Zevi was handsome, possessed an enchanting presence, and a singing voice. Many wrote that there was none like Zevi in stature, and his face burned with an intensity like fire. Many of his contemporaries claimed to have been converted to following Zevi when he appeared to them in dreams by the side of their beds. They would awake professing belief in him as the Messiah. Well, could have been some spirit, but it wasn't the Holy Spirit. Professor Gershom Shalem explained that a sincere expectation had arisen in the psyche of many Jews that their Messiah would come and lead them back to establish a Jewish homeland. Now, according to some critical interpretations of his behavior, Sabbatai showed signs of what modern scholars call maniac depressive psychosis. He publicly displayed ecstatic behavior, often followed by bouts of depression and seclusion. However, many of his modern-day followers argue that his behavior was simply what you would expect from religious mystics such as a Sufi. Now, remember, Islam is divided into three. There's the Sunnis, there's the Shiites, and there's the Sufis. The Sunnis are more Quranic, what the book says. The Shiites are what the leader, the Ayatollah, says. And the Sufis are the mystic, sword-swallowing, fire-breathing, miracle-a-day, keeps-the-devil-away crowd. And so the Sufis are very popular in Sudan in particular. And the Mahdi, the one who fought against General Charles Gordon, he was a Sufi messiah, for example. So the Sufis were the mystical, charismatic branch of Islam, so to speak. And so meditative chanting, trances, ecstatic dancing was part of being a Sufi. So Sabbatai Zevi fitted right in with the Sufis. Now, according to Professor Avram El-Kayyam, a faculty member of the Jewish Philosophy Department at Bar Ilan University in Israel, Sabbatai frequently engaged in Bektashi Sufi rituals with a ghastly bloodletting, cutting of tongues and all that stuff. And you just look at this hardware store in the Sufi temples of these characters where they've got everything from swords and whips and rods and axes and who knows what, and that's used. They're not decorations, they're practically used as part of their mystical relationships. In fact, Sabbatai Zevi's grave in Albania remains a Sufi shrine to this day, so the Sufis still regard Sabbatai Zevi as one of their own. Zevi's socially immoral and religiously unacceptable behavior led to him being expelled from Smyrna around 650. And for years he wandered through Greece and Thrace and Egypt and Syria. However, in 1665, his life changed forever when he met Rabbi Nathan of Gaza in Palestine. And Rabbi Nathan persuaded him that he was indeed the Messiah and he was going to usher in the new age. Rabbi Nathan convinced Sabbatai Zevi he needed to formally reveal himself in the year 1666. To fulfill Messianic prophecy. Now, that's not Messianic prophecy from the Bible. That's from the Kabbalah and from the Talmud. Zevi soon gained further support from the diaspora, the dispersed Jews around Europe, by promising Jews a return to the homeland and a rebuilt temple in Jerusalem. Although Zevi received strong support and was very popular amongst Jewish people, the leading rabbis in Jerusalem rejected Sabbatai's claims that he was the Messiah. And quite understandably, they ordered him to leave the city or be excommunicated. With hindsight, it would be better if they'd excommunicated him and expelled him from the city. Sabbatai returned to Turkey where the Sultan of the Ottoman Turkish Empire allowed him free reign to build up a phenomenal following. Now, this is quite a mystery. Why did the Muslim Turkish Sultan allow Sabbatai Zevi to build up his following within him? It must have served their interests too. So Jews from all over the world, from as far afield as England, Persia, Germany, Morocco, from Poland to Yemen, they poured into the Ottoman Empire to see and hear and meet their Messiah. However, after Sabbatai publicly proclaimed that the next year the temple in Jerusalem would be rebuilt, the Sultan was galvanized into action. Fearing a revolt that would lead this province declaring independence from the Ottoman Empire, the Sultan Muhammad IV confronted Sabbatai Zevi with a choice of either converting to Islam or being beheaded. And he delicately put it, your head or the turban. Now, wearing the turban was a symbol of converting to Islam. And it came as a shock to many of his supporters that their supposed long-awaited Messiah denounced his Jewish faith on the spot and chose to wear the Islamic turban to keep his head. And for the rest of his life, he wore the turban. All the pictures of him depict him wearing the turban. Zevi publicly converted to Islam and adopted a new Muslim name, Aziz Muhammad Effendi, or the Power of Muhammad. From then on, Zevi was on salary as a servant of the Sultan with a cryptic title, Keeper of the Gate. Zevi continued unabated in his messianic activities and also continued to receive the full support, including financial support, of the Islamic authorities and the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire. While Sabati's formal conversion to Islam dismayed and disillusioned many of his followers, many took it as a sign to also convert to Islam, while maintaining their Jewish identity and their mystical Kabbalah Sabbatean practices. Now, one of these Sabbatean cults, primarily located in Anatolia, modern-day Turkey, were called the Donmi, which translates to religious converts. Actually, it was a derogatory term which they themselves would never use for themselves, but that is one of the cults that built up. The Sabbatean followers explained Zevi's apparent apostasy as a descent into the grossest reality or husks of creation in order to reclaim the lost sparks of divine light. To repair the world, in other words. And these Kabbalist concepts were used to justify his heretical, apostate, degenerate behavior. According to Reb Yaakov Lieb Hakohen, the current director of Donmi West, a Californian Sabbath organization founded in 1972, Sabbati's conversion to Islam was not an act of cowardice. No, it wasn't apostasy. No, it wasn't just betraying the Jewish people, because his conversion was one of those mystical Masin Zarim that the Messiah was to perform to, and that was based on their reading of the Kabbalah, that is. So in keeping with Isaac Lurie's prophecies in the Lurian Kabbalah, these actions of Zevi, of breaking laws, of being a false convert, of deception and degeneracy, were essential to bring about conditions that would set the stage to initiate or directly expedite the fulfillment of Jewish messianic prophecy. Jews were to play an active role in bringing about and bringing forth God's kingdom on earth by infiltrating, subverting, and destroying every other religion and kingdom on earth. That's worth repeating. Infiltrating, subverting, and destroying every other religion and kingdom on earth. That's what they claimed was his goal. And there are those today who seem to be advancing Sabbati Zevi's goals. Revelation 21 verse 8 says, "But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." But Sabbati Zevi didn't want to worry about that scripture. The Kabbalah teaches a mystical synthesis between pagan teachings which preceded the Torah and Gnostic elements of Judaism. Remember, Gnosticism was one of the major heresies that the early church had to deal with. In fact, the Apostle John's epistles are primarily directed against them. The task is not to destroy evil, but to return evil to its source, Babylon. To include the left within the right, to uplift the fallen sparks. Just Chaldean or the Babylonian mysticism and occultism provided the most authentic version of the Kabbalah. So the core of the Kabbalah and the Talmud is not the Old Testament, the Bible. No, it's Babylonian occultism. This new philosophic paradigm provided a spiritual justification for proactive Zionism to bring about the formation of a Jewish state, which would undermine and replace all other states worldwide. The mystical Lurianic Kabbalah transformed the Messiah from a popular conquering national hero to a supreme cosmic conqueror, who won't only conquer all kingdoms in the whole world, but in fact the whole cosmos. The goal was not merely the emancipation of Jews from the yoke of the Gentiles, but a fundamental transformation of the entirety of creation, affecting material and spiritual worlds alike. Now, this isn't a theory. This isn't a conspiracy theory. This is what they say. This is their own writings and books. This is not something I have to dig into crevices for. These are published statements. This is what Sabbateanism stands for. This was to lead to, in the words of Gershom Scholem, a ratification of the primordial catastrophe of the breaking of the vessels, the Shivrat Hakelim, or repairing the world. The goal was to break everything down so that it can be built back better. I don't know if that sort of rings any bells somewhere, build back better. Yep, we've been hearing New World Order, World Economic Forum speaking about the Great Reset, Build Back Better. In fact, old Biden picked up this as his theme, Build Back Better. Funny, the people who are speaking about building back better, they've never built anything, and they haven't made anything better. Yep, Build Back Better also seems to fit in with the 666. According to Sabbatai Zevi, the acts of God's people must take deliberate forays into the world of sin, where the illusory nature of evil could be more readily exposed and the sparks elevated to their source. In other words, sin and evil is an illusion, and you must shatter the illusions by indulging it. With the declaration of Sabbatai Zevi as the Messiah in 1666, the Zionist goal of infiltrating, subverting, and ultimately replacing every other religion and kingdom and transforming every government on earth into a new world order became their central focus. Rabbi Nathan of Gaza declared that they were entering into a new age where all religious laws prior to Sabbatai Zevi were essentially obsolete. So now traditional religious taboos such as not eating pork, which was forbidden by Jewish dietary law, that's abolished. Former fast days are now to be feast days. One of the oft-quoted prayers of Zevi was, "Blessed art thou, Lord our God, King of the universe, who makes the forbidden things permissible." Sabbatai Zevi declared that his duty was to descend through the gates of impurity into the impure realm of Kelipot and to rescue the divine spark still imprisoned there. The Messiah was constrained to commit strange acts, masim zarim, which includes apostasy, adultery, theft, idolatry, deception, and covetousness, breaking all the commands, basically. All of these breaking of every law of God was necessary for the fulfillment of Messiah's mission. Now, our understanding is that our Lord fulfilled the law in order to achieve our salvation. This false Messiah says you've got to break all the laws to be the Messiah. This is a literal antichrist. The psychology of the Sabbateans is utterly paradoxical. Essentially, its guiding principle was whoever is as he appears cannot be a true believer. In practice, this means that true faith cannot be faith which men publicly profess. On the contrary, true faith must always be concealed. For a Sabbatean, it is their duty to deny their true faith outwardly. Are you a Satanist? No, I'm not a Satanist. Are you an occultist? No, I'm not an occultist. Are you a Sabbatean? No, I'm not. So they can state the exact opposite. They can deny their true faith, and that is virtuous, because they're meant to deceive. The seed must be planted in the bed of the soul, and it cannot grow until it's first been covered over. So concealment and deception is essential for redemption. This theme of a secret, hidden, or occultic identity became part of the Sabbatean religious philosophy. Today we've got secret societies. They come from this kind of idea. In essence, a true act cannot be committed publicly to be seen by the world. Like true faith, a true act must be concealed, because only through concealment could it negate the falsehood of what is explicit. This sounds like skulls and bones and a whole bunch of these Freemasonry and other secret societies where you're meant to deny to the world what you really believe. So through a revolution of values, an inversion of values, what was formerly sacred now becomes profane. What was formerly profane becomes sacred. A false witness will not go unpunished. He who speaks lies shall perish. I should say about this that I experienced this bizarrely in 1992. I was at Wits University. I was invited to speak on blasphemy, to debate on blasphemy. Now, as it so happens, I had inside information that I understood what's behind this debate. And I just got a phone call from Wits University. Would you be willing to come up to Johannesburg? We'll pay for your air ticket. You're to debate on blasphemy. No problem. It just so happened I knew that Wits University had sought permission to screen The Last Temptation of Christ, the most blasphemous film ever produced. And the permission given, it had to be an academic setting, one screening only, on a specific day, and it had to be preceded by debate, which had to include an ordained minister who opposed the film to discuss its merits and demerits in a debate. So I knew they needed somebody to do this, and they turned to me. Well, my next phone call was to Chell Olsen and Fana Sabisi. I said, I need help. And they shipped up a whole lot of Christians for Truth people from Kwasibantu, who became a good third of the audience at Wits University. So that was pretty helpful. However, I was opposed by a Dutch Reformed Dominee apostate and a chairman who was just as bad. And this Dutch Reformed Dominee at that stage, he was running Kreis en Kroniek, Cross and Chronicle on SATV. And he argued, and this sounds so bizarre, it only makes sense now that I understand what Sabbataeanism is. He says, because God created all, everything is holy. And the only thing that is unholy and to be forbidden is censorship. Because everything's made in the image of God, that means pornography is also made in the image of God. And to censor pornography is to censor the image of God. And so censorship is blasphemy. And pornography is holy. Dead serious. This is what this imbecile apostate argued. And I'd never heard anything like this before. Absolutely bizarre. Well, as it so happens that at the end of the debate, and they smugly announced we're going to show the last temptation of Christ, Reverend Fana Sabisi stood up and said, we're not going to allow that. And all across the Kwasibantu Zulus and Afrikaans people from Transvaal Christian Action came up onto the platform, stood in front of the screen and started to sing hymns. And they threatened us with the angry youth of Soweto, whoever they were. And these guys toyed in shortly afterwards. When they saw us standing there, shoulder, they fled. And a couple of hours later, the police arrived. And police arrived about midnight, let us out, and informed us that the permission of the Publication Control Board only lasted till midnight. So they made sure they didn't arrive until midnight. And they joined us for our prayers on the steps of Witwatersrand University. But that's the first time I'd actually heard this insanity that pornography is holy and that censorship is blasphemy. What kind of twisted mindset is that? The Sabbatean sect, which flourished during the lifetime of Sabbatai Zevi and afterwards continued to indulge in wife-sharing, religious sex orgies, adultery, incest. It is thought by some scholars that Zevi had some deep connections with the Bektasha Sufi order of Islam. Some similarities through the Sabbatean Donmi and the Bektashi Sufi practice include the deliberate violation of kashrut or halal. They'll deliberately violate the dietary laws and all immoral laws too. And it included ritualistic group sex and wife swapping and ecstatic singing and chanting mystical Kabbalah and belief in hidden occultic reading of the Torah and of the Quran. So the Sufi sect in Albania shares this also with these Sabbateans. The Sabbateans in Salonika, that's the biblical Thessalonica, regularly held a celebration on the 22nd day of the Hebrew month of Adar, known as the Festival of the Lamb. That sounds fairly pleasant, but it wasn't. The Festival of the Lamb included getting drunk and extinguishing the lights, and in total darkness there was religious sexual violations of the sanctity of marriage, incest. It was debauched, it was ugly, it was ghastly. Their teaching was that as a grain of wheat must rot in the earth before it can sprout, so the deeds of a believer must become fully rotten before they can germinate in salvation. I don't know what kind of sick people think this one up, but I think this comes from the pit of hell. This conveys the Sabbatean theology in a nutshell. Salvation comes through sin. Redemption is achieved through deception. This is literally an antichrist religion. It's the exact opposite of Christianity. In James 4, verse 4, we read, adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity, hatred towards God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. According to Gershom Scholem, Sabbateanism is the matrix of every significant movement to have emerged in the 18th and 19th centuries. From Hasidism to Reformed Judaism to Freemasonry to Marxist revolutionary communism. Take Reformed Judaism. Now, when we use the word Reformed in Christianity, it means getting back to the Bible. When you use the word Reformed in Judaism, it means getting as far away from the Old Testament as possible. You know how strictly the Old Testament forbids tattoos. So much so that most Jewish cemeteries will not bury a Jew who's got a tattoo. But Reformed Judaism is different. I mean, they will openly have tattoos, which is, I mean, how do you like this? Some Jews ink their bodies to express their commitment to Judaism. Jewish tradition is surprisingly nuanced on the practice. Nuanced? You shall not put a tattoo on your body. I am the Lord your God. It is an abomination. I mean, how nuanced is that? But anyway, Reformed Judaism will put the LGBTQ homosexual pervert flag with their own Jewish symbols and with their skull caps, and they will openly associate their Judaism with the whole LGBTQ, everything from perversion through to tattoos and a lot. But Reformed Judaism comes from Sabbatianism, and Freemasonry is very, very overlapped with Sabbatianism. There's a lot of similarities between the secret occultic nature of Freemasonry, and there seems to be an overlap between Sabbateans and some parts of Freemasonry. Notice some of the symbols in Freemasonry. Some of the pillars, and notice of the stars, the five-point star and the six-pointed star. Notice the idea of the ladder from down, and the V, which is also part of the whole idea that you have to go down in order to go up. And notice the stars and the crescent moon. There's a whole lot of interesting symbols in Freemasonry. And many of these Freemasonry symbols are also symbols within Sabbateanism. And notice how all the religions of the world are seen to be some kind of basis out of which this will grow out of. Then you get these strange symbols of not just a triangle within a triangle, but the all-seeing eye within a triangle within a circle. And everyone should recognize this. These are Freemasonry views, and they will tell you that the G stands for God. But there's a lot of evidence that that's not what we mean, as in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, or Elohim. We're not talking about Yeshua el-Mashiach, or the Trinity here. Just as Sabbateanism grew out of Anatolia, so later the Young Turks, many of whom came from false converts who pretended to be Muslims, led to take over the Ottoman Empire, and then they launched the genocide of the Armenians and of the Assyrians and of the Greek Christians. And there's a lot of evidence that, in fact, the Young Turks and those who took over the Ottoman Empire and launched the genocide of the Christian Armenians, Turks, Christian Armenians, Assyrians, and Greeks were actually Sabbateans, not real Muslims at all. Sabbatean believers teach that they are champions of a new world order, which will be established by overthrowing the values of all other religions and all other kingdoms. Their goal is to establish a new world order. They teach the holiness of sin. Some of you might know of Pastor John Hagee, a serious false prophet in America. He teaches the day America turns its back on the state of Israel is the day that God will turn his back on America. Well, it's interesting that before 1949, America would have looked absolutely blessed, actually. It looks like it's gone absolutely cursed since. And he's suggesting that the more America supports the state of Israel, a state that legalizes pornography, prostitution, and abortion, by the way. We've had the head of the pro-life movement in Israel, in our boardroom down below, revealing to us that nobody has killed more Jews in the state of Israel through abortion. They've murdered their young people by the millions. No country in the world has a stronger pro-LGBT policy than the state of Israel. Homosexuals around the world have voted Tel Aviv the most gay-friendly city in the world. Now, the Bible speaks about Jerusalem as a great whore who rides the beast, which symbolized the Roman Empire, and the city in which our Lord was crucified and which killed the prophets. And I mean, that's pretty clear which city was our Lord crucified, and obviously speaking about Jerusalem. The book of Revelation speaks about God's judgment upon that city. And you know the passage in Chronicles where we're told, should you love the wicked and hate those who hate those who, should you love the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Because of this, the wrath of the Lord is upon you. What's the context? The context is Judah considering going to the support of Israel, the northern kingdoms of Israel, and being told, should you love the wicked? That's Israel. And help those who hate the Lord. Who hates the Lord? Israel. the wrath of the Lord is upon you. And Judah was told to go back and not to go to the support militarily of them. That's the context. And yet we've got this man, John Hagee, saying that you will be blessed in accordance with how much you support Israel, a political state. A political state that persecutes Christians. A friend of mine who served in Israeli Defense Force in the Yom Kippur War in the 1970s told me how he lost his Israeli citizenship because he became a believer in the Messiah. He said, I don't call myself a Christian. I call myself a Jew who believes in Yeshua al-Mashiach. He lost his citizenship, even though he's a veteran of the IDF. As he said, in Israel you can be an atheist and be a citizen. You can be a communist and be a citizen. You can be a Satanist and be a citizen of Israel. But you can't be a believer in the Messiah. Then you lose your citizenship. And there's people like Hagee who say that your salvation depends upon your support for the state of Israel. Well, America's not been blessed since supporting the state of Israel and pouring tens of billions of dollars in every year. Do you know that more money goes to the state of Israel every year in foreign aid from America than all other foreign aid to all other countries in the world combined? The state of Israel has received more foreign aid than all other foreign aid to all other countries combined through all of history. It's the most foreign aid supported country on the planet. Has that led to a blessing in America? No. But don't you think there's something about America killing their babies that's relevant, or legalizing pornography, or tolerating prostitution, gambling, debasing the currency, bombing other countries, killing civilians? I mean, don't you think breaking God's laws or rejecting Christ or taking the Bible out of schools or the Ten Commandments off the walls, don't you think that's got something to do with it? No, says John Hagee, the only thing that really matters is do you support the state of Israel or not? Your salvation has nothing to do with race. It's all to do with grace. It's not about supporting some political state in the Middle East or anywhere else for that matter. And worse than anything else, John Hagee teaches no Christian should share the gospel with a Jew. Because Jews are already God's people, and it's blasphemy for you to share the gospel with a Jew. How dare you, you goyim, you Gentile filth, how dare you suggest that some Jew needs to be saved and that he needs to repent and to share with him the gospel? He's already a child of God. Can you imagine anything more hateful than to tell people not to share the gospel with people who need the gospel of salvation? There's only one way of salvation. Jesus is the way, the truth, and life. No one comes to the Father except by him. No one. God doesn't have two sets of peoples. He's got one group of people. And that's Jews and Gentiles who believe in Christ. And those who don't love the Son don't love the Father. Those who are against Christ are antichrist. You can't be God's people and antichrist at the same time. What does CUFI stand for? Christians United for Israel. Here's the American vice president in the previous administration, Mike Pence, gathered with John Hagee. And Hagee is dangerous as anything. You've got to see films like Marching to Zion. He calls for America to launch preemptive nuclear strikes on Iran and all sorts of insane things that would not help the world. But so great is the Israel lobby, and how can it not be? They get tens of billions of dollars every year from America and tens of billions of euros from Germany every year, and they use it to buy up Christian organizations, political parties, magazines, TV stations, pastors, who then lobby for more politics to support. So that a lot of the wars America's got involved in the Middle East is nothing to do with America, but just suiting Israel's foreign policy. 50 years after the death of Sabbatai Zevi, Jacob Frank was born. Now, Jerry Rabbo, in his book, The Untold Story of 50 Jewish Messiahs, report that Jacob Frank believed he was the reincarnation of Sabbatai Zevi. Jacob Frank continued and extended the paradoxical teaching of Sabbatai Zevi, declaring that with the coming of the Messianic Age, Zevi had transformed sexual prohibitions in the Bible into permissions and obligations. Not only may you break those laws, you must. The only way to purify the soul is through sexual immorality and orgies. Debauchery is therapy. Now, how modern is that? I mean, here this person was back in the 1700s, and he sounds like some modern pop psychologist is saying that the way to deal with your phobias is indulge the flesh. And you know, what a lot of nonsense. The therapy of debauchery. Jacob Frank asserted that the God of the Bible is evil. Jews need to reject every moral law and commandment. Well, how explicit is that? This is Antichrist straight away. The only way to a new world order is through the total destruction of Christian civilization. This is straight quotes. These are exactly what Jacob Frank was teaching. Jacob Frank insisted that child sacrifice, rape, incest, the drinking of blood was perfectly acceptable and necessary religious rituals. Salvation is through sin. Redemption is achieved through deception. But the Bible says lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. Those who deal truthfully are his delight. Jacob Frank also convinced his followers the only way for their special form of Judaism to survive was for them to outwardly become Christians. Just as the Donmi had descended into the world of Islam, so they need to descend into the world of Catholicism and even the Protestant faith. Well, understandably, Jewish authorities in Poland excommunicated Frank and his followers and rejected his concepts of purification through transgression. He held annual springtime lamb festivals, which consisted of drug use, sacrifice, nudity, the exchanges of spouses and daughters for immoral religious sex. Frank preached that true Jewish believers were to cross every boundary, transgress every taboo, mix the sacred with the profane. And Eve Frank, his daughter, was called the holy matron of the Sabbatean movement. She served as a central figure with the sex rituals of the sect in Poland. Jeremiah 17:9 says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" But you can be pretty sure Jacob Frank's religion came from the mind of Satan himself. Jacob Frank had approximately 50,000 disciples. But although his following was much smaller than that of Sabbatai Zevi, Jacob Frank's cult would grow to become far more influential as it recruited some of Europe's most influential royalty, nobility, and the richest bankers on earth. Gershom Scholem describes Jacob Frank as one of the most frightening phenomena in the whole history of Jewish history, a religious leader who, whether for purely religious motives or otherwise, was in all his actions a truly corrupt and degenerate individual. I mean, he's got to be one of the most degenerate individuals in history, for sure. Jacob Frank taught you had to be free, you had to free yourself from all laws, from all conventions, from all religions, and adopt every conceivable attitude and reject it to follow the Messiah step by step into the abyss, which, by the way, is another term for hell. The annihilation of every religion is the true way. Now, is this ringing any bells somewhere? Has anyone noticed this somewhere in any films or movies or music? In order to ascend, one must first descend. No man can climb a mountain until he has first descended to its base. Therefore, we must descend and be cast down to the bottom rung, for only then can we climb to the infinite, he taught. This is the principle of Jacob's ladder. To him, he says, Jacob's ladder is shaped like a V. Nobody else thought so before, but this is Jacob Frank's idea. I did not come into this world to lift you up, but rather to cast you down to the bottom of the abyss. This is such occultic, satanic imagery. Jacob Frank taught antinomianism, hostility to God's law, the rejection of all law, and libertinism, the rejection of all authority. Again, what is the spirit of our age? Is it not antinomianism and libertinism? You can just see a rejection of all authority, a rejection of all laws throughout society, and it's being taught even in the universities, even in pulpits. He demanded from his followers absolute voluntary abasement, utter shamelessness. A Sabbatean, he taught, needs to be able to commit every sin without any sense of shame, remorse, or guilt. Have you noticed in the Way of the Master interviews, how many people on the streets, near the beaches of California, when they're asked, you know, have you committed adultery? Yeah, and they're bouncing around their jaws, chewing their chewing gum, and taking God's name in vain, often. Yeah, I'm lying. I'm a homosexual. Yes, do this, and that, adultery. And the people even smug and smiling and laughing about it often, like no shame. People used to be ashamed of that. Of course, some people at Ray Comfort interviews are ashamed of these things, but there's a surprising amount who have no shame anymore. Jacob Frank's Kabbalist interpretations led to nihilism, or nothingness. He taught that one conquered through deception. Frank taught that Israel's exile was not a consequence of its sins at all. No, it was part of a plan to bring about the destruction of all Gentiles throughout the world. To establish a Jewish state back in Palestine was not sufficient. No, the whole order of the world, especially Christian Europe, must be subverted and destroyed. In his classic book, To Eliminate the Opiate, Rabbi Marvin Antelman revealed that Jacob Frank got his financing from the Rothschild financial empire based in Frankfurt and worldwide influence by his alliance with Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati. Jacob Frank, Adam Weishaupt, Rothschild, together formed the Illuminati. When Jacob Frank entered Frankfurt, an alliance had already begun between Meyer Amschel Rothschild, the immensely wealthy banker of Frankfurt, and Adam Weishaupt, who was the son of Jewish Kabbalist rabbi in Bavaria. Educated by Jesuits, Weishaupt became a Roman Catholic priest and then formed an alliance with Meyer Rothschild. Now understand, to achieve your success, and because Europe was in the hands of Christians, both Protestants or Catholic, the Sabbateans were taught you must become a Catholic or Protestant to influence, to infiltrate. Just like to get power in the Ottoman Empire, they had to openly become Muslims. So on the 1st of May 1776, Weishaupt chose the timing of the launching of the Illuminati in accordance with Sabbatean Kabbalist teachings. He chose the 1st of May because May is the fifth month, added to the first day equals six. He chose 1776 because the four numbers add up to 21. 1 plus 7 plus 7 plus 6 equals 21, which is 7 times 3. The sacred number 6 plus 21 equals 27, another number which occultic Kabbalah's powers believe this is formed by multiplying 3 by 9. Therefore, these are super powerful numerical forces. Weishaupt carefully chose this date because he believed that even the greatest plans will be doomed to failure if not carried out at the most numerically advantageous time. Just think how many things happened on intriguing times. When did D-Day take place? The sixth hour of the sixth day of the sixth month. Super important timing. When did 9/11 take place? 9/11, which is what Americans dial for when in trouble, 9/11. And also you think there's the two towers that look like 11. And the amount of the airliners that were being hijacked, you know, Flight 11 and things like that. The numerical, these things were not accidental. They love the importance of numbers. In the 18th century, Meyer Amschel Bauer, later Rothschild, adopted the hexagon as a symbol of the red shield. The six-pointed star hexagon was adopted by a Rothschild family, put on their coat of arms. Meyer Amschel Bauer, who later changed his surname to Rothschild or Red Shield, Rothschild, lived between 1744 and 1812. He had five sons, Amschel Meyer, who remained in Frankfurt, Solomon Meyer, who settled in Vienna, Austria, in 1816, and Nathan Meyer, who settled in London, England, 1797, set up the Bank of England, and Karl Meyer, who settled in Naples, Italy, 1821, and James Meyer, who settled in Paris, 1812. And so since the 17th century, the House of Rothschild has dominated the banking house of Europe. Well, all except Russia. They didn't manage to get Russia right, but they got the Tsar back by massacring his whole family, destroying his empire. And so these are the Rothschild family, which have dominated the banks of London, Frankfurt, Vienna, Naples, Paris, and of course later New York and all that too. Nathan Rothschild was quoted as saying, "I care not what puppet is placed upon the throne of England to rule the empire on which the sun never sets. The man who controls Britain's money supply controls the British Empire. And I control Britain's money supply. Whoever controls the insurance of money controls the government." Adam Weishaupt, Meyer Rothschild, and Jacob Frank launched the Illuminati on the 1st of May 1776 in Frankfurt with the long-term political goals of, number one, abolition of all monarchies and all governments. Number two, abolition of private property and inheritances. Number three, abolition of nationalism. Number four, abolition of the family and of the institution of marriage. Number five, abolition of all religion. Number six, establishment of compulsory communal education of all children. Now, can one see any of this being fulfilled? There's been a lot of revolutions, have overthrown a lot of royal families, and it wasn't just the French Revolution and the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, which was a very bloody affair indeed. But notice, if anyone's been watching the Downton Abbey series, you notice the crisis that started after 1914, that suddenly these great houses that had been the power of England were all going bankrupt and closing. Why? Because the Labour Party began the principle of taxing property and taxing inheritance. So whenever someone died, the estate had to split up to pay the taxes. And they couldn't afford it. And taxing property, these huge properties, there's no way that they could sustain these houses. And so they got cut up and sold and demolished. And basically, taxing property is a way of abolishing private ownership of property. You think you own your property? Try not paying your rates and taxes. You'll discover that the government thinks they own it. Taxing inheritance is immoral. It's forbidden by God. A person who's giving inheritance to children as children's children is fulfilling God's command. But when the government taxes that inheritance, they're taxing what's already been taxed. This is a free will gift given by a grandfather, say, to his grandchildren. And next thing, it's stolen by the state. And so taxing inheritance and property abolishes inheritance and property. Abolition of nationalism, well, that's what the EU and AU and everything else is all about. And that's what the war in Ukraine is all about, too. And abolishing the family, well, that's what LGBTQ, RS, and gender confusion is all about, too. Abolishing religion, I think they've been making great strides in that. When the churches are even willing to play the masquerade and the salvation by vaccination, social distancing, and closing churches, even over Easter. And as for compulsory communal education for children, well, I think the word is indoctrination. Anyone who's read Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto of 1848 will immediately recognize that the Illuminati agenda is clearly articulated here. The Marxist Manifesto is nothing other than Sabbatianism. And if you study Karl Marx, you understand Karl Marx was a Sabbatian. He was a Satanist, he was an occultist, but he is a Sabbatian too. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts and murders and adulteries and fornications and thefts and false witnesses, blasphemies. The Rothschild line actually goes all the way down to Karl Marx and to Lionel Volter Rothschild and the Balfour Declaration. So you see both the five-pointed star and the six-pointed star being two arms of this fight. One's a revolutionary arm, the other's more like the banking arm. It is impossible to understand the present cancel culture without understanding Sabbatianism. It's impossible to understand the burn, loot, murder, Baal, Lucifer, Moloch, gender confusion, lockdown lunacy, masquerade madness, COVID cult, salvation by vaccination, Christophobia, Hollywood degeneracy, indoctrination through so-called education, mainstream, lamestream media, the United Nations, the largest group of unelected dictators and gangsters with flags on the planet, the European Union, which is as aggressive and insane right now as ever. You cannot understand the pronouncements or the activities without understanding the Sabbatian occultic roots of the New World Disorder. In many ways, Jeffrey Epstein epitomizes the Sabbatian religion. He actually owned, this billionaire, nobody knows where he got his billions from, owned this island off the coast of Puerto Rico, Little St. James Island. This was Jeffrey Epstein's island, which was a place of unimaginable terror and horror for its victims. The weird cubic temple with Islamic-type dome on Jeffrey Epstein's island reportedly led to an underground chamber. It's been described as a rape dungeon and Luciferian temple, with a tunnel entrance that could be serviced by vehicles, with a submarine bay, with an ancient evil object of worship underneath the whole thing, with tram track interconnection with the other houses on the island. This temple of Orgy Island, or Pedophile Island, with rape dungeons. The same owl from Bohemian Grove on top of it. Absolutely hideous. And the building's painted with the blue and white stripes, the same colors as the flag of the State of Israel. Quite strange. Very strange. Everything about it's weird. Notice also, it's bolted from the outside. Now, most buildings are bolted from the inside. I mean, the symbolic bolting, putting the bars and bolts on the outside of it, just suggests that this is to keep people in rather than get them. I mean, the symbolism is just horrific. Jeffrey Epstein certainly seemed to epitomize the Sabbatean philosophy of unrestrained sexual debauchery and deception. So too did Hollywood producer, sexual predator and rapist Harvey Weinstein, who produced no end of films, including Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, and so many others that start with a Weinstein production. I mean, all sick, sordid, evil films that promote evil and which undermine anything good. Harvey Weinstein and many of his highly influential friends include many world leaders. Now, here's a theory. You remember this poor Madeleine McCain, who was kidnapped from Portugal back in, was 2013. One of the suspected people missing, one of the people wanted from an identikit for the potential kidnapping, looks pretty much like the girlfriend and co-conspirator of Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell. Now, when this Attorney General Acosta was interviewed for the job of Labor Secretary, the former attorney, U.S. Attorney Alexander Acosta, said he had cut the non-prosecution deal with Epstein's attorneys because he'd been told to back off because Epstein was above his pay grade. And I was told Epstein belonged to intelligence and to leave it alone. Now, Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein were spies who used underage sex, statutory rape, to blackmail politicians. That's what an ex-handler claimed. Now, Jeffrey Epstein's sex trafficking partner and daughter of the most famous Israel super spy, she is arrested by the FBI. Well, Robert Maxwell is the father of Ghislaine Maxwell. And Robert Maxwell was Israel's top Mossad agent of all time. And there's a book about the murder of a media mongol. And these men were both Mossad assets. And in fact, Jeffrey Epstein was able to blackmail all kinds of people from around the world by indulging in all their fantasies and providing them whatever they wanted and filming them. There's cameras in every room and being able to get them to vote whichever way they wanted or do what they wanted. And there's no doubt he also was working for the CIA. The CIA and Mossad were using Jeffrey Epstein, and that's probably where he got his billions from. But I mean, he could rope in presidents. And Bill Clinton was a platinum, gold, diamond, frequent flyer of a pedo airline. And just, you know, it makes one's head spin with all these bizarre things. This, by the way, is one of the paintings in Jeffrey Epstein's apartment in New York of President Bill Clinton dressed in red high heels and a blue dress. I know it's not a photograph, it's a painting, but, you know, did he pose for it? Is this a joke? What's this doing in there? But there's no doubt that Bill Clinton went often on that plane 20-something times. And, President Pedophile, as they say. And Harvey Weinstein. I mean, these people just epitomize Sabbateanism all the way. And the amount of other Hollywood stars who hugging and embracing old Bill Clinton and Harvey Weinstein and Jeffrey Epstein. These are frequent flyers on Jeffrey Epstein's planes. Yep, it includes some very famous people there, like Oprah Winfrey and so on, Woody Allen, many creeps, and of course Bill Gates. Bill Gates is majorly in with these people. Bill Gates makes sense when you understand his connection with Jeffrey Epstein. Bill Gates flew with Jeffrey Epstein in the Elite Express in 2013, and he's the one who claims to want to empower young girls. Well, this is exact opposite of that. Bill Gates repeatedly met with Jeffrey Epstein even after Epstein was convicted of sex crimes. What was that, back in 2008 when he was first arrested, although they didn't put him in jail for long because they were told lay off, step back, he's an intelligence asset. But just look at all the connections with Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, the whole of them. In fact, Jeffrey Epstein's web of deceit stretches all the way to Buckingham Palace, Prince Andrew. All sorts of people. Of course, just about everyone in Hollywood, more than half of the Congress and Senate in the US and so on. But back to the father of Ghislaine Maxwell. Robert Maxwell, well, a lot of his story is told in the Epstein, dead men tell no tales, spies, lies, and blackmail story. But do you know that Maxwell, Robert Maxwell, he owned one of the biggest newspapers in Britain. And he just disappeared one day and apparently disappeared overboard and committed suicide. Well, as one church in America had in their billboard, Jesus willingly died for you. Unlike Epstein, who didn't kill himself. Shadowland. This is from the author of Saboteurs, speaking about Jeffrey Epstein to the Clintons, from Obama to Biden, the occult elite, exposing the deep state actors at war with Christianity, at war with Donald Trump, at war with America's destiny. So the deep state people who are trying to destroy Donald Trump and destroy Christianity, the people who stole America's election 2020, those people, they are all in one big occultic cabal. And if you haven't seen yet the film 2000 Mules, or Agenda, that would really help make sense of what we are dealing with. Sabote Zevi and Jacob Frank make sense of all of this. Everyone will deceive his neighbor and will not speak the truth. They've taught their tongue to speak lies. They weary themselves to commit iniquity. Now I understand Hollywood when I understand Sabbateanism. That explains so much of their films, does it not? And this man produced how many Oscar-winning, Academy Award-winning, and Hillary Clinton really loved Harvey Weinstein, as did old all these different creeps from Obama onwards. And the amount of Hollywood actresses who wrapped themselves around Harvey Weinstein, buried their principles, prostituted themselves in order to get the Academy Awards. And so many of them at the Academy Awards, I want to thank God and Harvey Weinstein. Laughter, literally. These are the kind of things people would get. And then one of the people handing over an award to, I think it was Gwyneth Paltrow, now you won't have to pretend to like Harvey Weinstein anymore, and everyone laughs. I mean, the whole of Hollywood knew what Harvey Weinstein was for years. Then all act shocked when it comes out. Well, then you've got Oprah Winfrey, who's part of the whole deal too. Well, she hyped this John of God, who's another Sabbatean, and turned out in the end also pedophile. And so as they're saying, you know, once upon a time in Peterwood, instead of Hollywood. Do you know what the Georgia Guidestones are? The Georgia Guidestones have the whole New World Order Sabbatean goals there. And it just so happens, by sheer coincidence, to be 666 miles from the UN headquarters in New York. How's that for coincidence? This is a conspiracy against freedom on so many levels. And I'm willing to bet money, not that I'm into gambling, that the heads of all the major big media are Sabbateans. It's consistent with their policies. You violate community standards when you put something Christian up. And then, have you ever heard of Albert Bourla? He's the chairman and chief executive officer of Pfizer. You know, the people who just pioneered vaccination. He is born and raised in Thessalonica, Greece. His parents are Sephardic Jews. He established Pfizer Artificial Intelligence Center in his hometown. And in 2020, Bourla pushed Pfizer employees for the fast development of a COVID-19 so-called vaccine. That's changed the definition of vaccine to make it fit, but DNA altering, of course. He took the risk of producing the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccines before approval from the Food and Drug Administration so it would be ready to ship immediately upon approval. Well, that's a big risk. That's hundreds of millions of dollars risk, maybe billions. Not knowing it's going to be approved? How did he know it was going to be approved? Well, if he was a Sabbatean, it would be an inside network like Freemasons, and you'd know it's going to be approved ahead of time, and then maybe it wasn't such a risk. But a strategy of pricing during the pandemic has been called war profiteering by the former CDC or Center for Disease Control Chief Tom Friedman. Now, I don't agree with everything on here, and I don't think anyone who necessarily forms this kind of symbol is a Sabbatean or an occult or a Luciferian. But isn't it amazing how many top people use that symbol publicly and opposed or pictured posing with that symbol? Helping understanding Sabbateanism helps us understand the times and the threat that confronts us. 2 Peter 2:19. While they promised them freedom, they themselves are slaves of depravity. You could write that over so many governments and so many different NGOs these days too. Justice is turned back, and righteousness stands afar off. For truth is fallen in the street. Equity cannot enter. So truth fails. And he who departs from evil makes himself a prey or makes himself a target. Isaiah 59. This is a nation that does not obey the voice of the Lord, their God, nor receive correction. Truth has perished and has been cut off from their mouths. Jeremiah 7:28. And war broke out in heaven, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. That's in Revelation 12:7. We are taught that Satan, who deceives the whole world, Revelation 12, verse 9, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine upon them. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers. And they will turn the ears away from the truth and be turned aside to fables. 2 Timothy 4 really spells it out. But I fear, wrote the Apostle Paul, I fear lest somehow as the serpent deceived Eve by his craftiness, so your minds may be corrupted from the simplicity that is in Christ. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 3. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key to the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, which is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years, cast him into the bottomless pit, and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more. Revelation 20, verse 1 to 3 makes clear that nations are being deceived today. So if you find yourself in agreement with the world, you're probably being deceived. And if we find ourselves in agreement with the world media, the world entertainment industry, the world's indoctrination or disinformation industries, then we've got to know we've been deceived. For do I now persuade men, O God? Or do I seek to please men? If I still sought to please men, I would not be a servant of Christ. Galatians 1:10. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all the ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Romans 1:18. Who will rise up for me against the wicked? Who will make a stand for me against the workers of iniquity? Cultural Marxism is Sabbatianism in practice, in daily life. Now, the presentation of tonight, all the text and quite a lot of the pictures are in a Gospel Defense League newsletter just back from the printer today. Got it at the table. Please help yourself. Take more. We've got more on the counters too. And if you can distribute more, we need to get the word out. We're going to try and upload this on the web, video, audio, PowerPoint, to help people to share it more. This is the latest Gospel Defense League website article. And also back from the print today, we've got the tribute to Mrs. Dorothea Scarborough available in printed form with many lovely pictures that you can take home as well. We'll be uploading this presentation on frontlinemissionsa.org to be shared widely. Also, if you haven't yet seen our latest Frontline Fellowship news on 40 years of Frontline, it's available in the Perspex stands by the door. And we're coming up to the Great Commission course in 2 weeks' time. So do help us make it known and book if you want to be part of any part of it. Questions, comments, complaints, criticisms. Sabbatianism and the roots of the New World Disorder. Questions, comments?
Information overload.
I understand.
Very rapid, but very relevant. Very relevant.
Judah?
I saw in some of the pictures there were images and statues of goats. For, I think, the Sabbatean.
Yes.
And the occultic practices.
Right.
So, do you know what that.
Yes, indeed. So, in the Bible, Jesus said that he'll separate the goats on his left from the sheep on his right. In the French Revolution, the French revolutionaries identified themselves as the left. They said, we are the left, we are the damned. We're against church, we're against God. And so the whole concept of the left and the goats comes from a biblical imagery which they take an inverse position on. They're saying, we are the goats. We are the damned. So Jesus identified those on his left as the goats who are lost, as contrasted from the sheep on his right. And so, interesting, that's exactly the origin of it. According to Otto Scott in his book, Robespierre, Inside the French Revolution, he says that's the actual origin of the concept of the left. And so you can see the Sabbateans are taking biblical imagery and identifying with it. And you can see them often falling over themselves to try and identify the 666 and the goats and all of that sort of thing. It's plain rebellion to God. And you can see today people are flaunting it. They're proud of being blasphemous and antichrist. Namisa, you had a question?
Yes, I wanted to ask the Young Turks, when did they take over Constantinople?
Yes, so when the Young Turks were a very powerful influence in the Ottoman Empire leading up to the First World War. And they were the main ones who pushed the Sultan, against his better judgment, to declaring war and taking part as part of the Axis forces allied with Germany and Austria to fight against Russia and Britain. So the Young Turks were really, they weren't the government yet because they were still ruled by a Sultan, but they were the biggest political power in the Ottoman Empire, and they were the power behind getting involved in the First War. So effectively in 1914, the Young Turks managed to seize control. And there's quite a lot of evidence, especially in the book Synagogue of Satan, that in fact the Young Turks in many cases were nothing other than Sabbateans who were pretending to be Muslims. And by the way, notice what they did. They took Turkey from being an Islamic country to being a country that was officially secular. And they slaughtered the Christians. They annihilated the Christians from even Smyrna, which had been a Christian city for something like 19 centuries. And they wiped out Smyrna, something like 300,000 Christians in the city of Smyrna in 1922. That was the final destruction of Smyrna. Absolutely horrific.
So the new political entity today that calls itself the Young Turks, that's a leftist news organization. Did they name themselves on purpose?
Or? I don't think they're the same as the Young Turks who took Turkey back in the early part of the 20th century. And the Young Turks soon took the government, and they first, once they overthrew the Sultan and the Ottoman Empire collapsed and they were divided up, Turkey was totally taken control of by the Young Turks, and then Atatürk became their former leader. They built a whole cult around him. Atatürk was actually a hero of the Battle of Dardanelles, the Bosphorus battles against the Australians and the New Zealanders were there. But Atatürk, he was almost certainly a Sabbatean. I mean, he was quite evil what he did to the Christians. He wiped them out. He seemed to have been a good leader from the Turkish perspective, but when you look at how he targeted Christians. But then again, he is also quite vicious on the Muslims. So here's somebody who claimed to be a Muslim, who ended up working against Islam and killing Christians, which again fits the Sabbatean view. The trouble with many of these secret societies is, how do you prove a member of a secret society? They're not going to admit they are, but sometimes you can just tell from the fruit and what their consistent policies are. Brian.
It seems to me that over the last few years, they've become increasingly in your face. Whereas, you know, you talk about deception and keeping it quiet. Something seems to have changed it, because if you look at the World Economic Forum, you know, with the property, for example, I mean, they say by 2030 you will own nothing and be happy.
Yes.
So do you think they're changing course? Do you think they're so confident that they've got this thing wrapped up now that they can say and do what they like?
That would seem to be it. That's exactly what's going on right now. We've never seen anything quite this bad before. For a long time, we thought, these people are stupid. And now we're starting to say, actually, they're not stupid, they're evil. It's like when you start seeing that unbelievably bad things Hollywood does and brings out. And, you know, many people say, but these films don't make the same amount of money and they're not uplifting and this isn't what the people want. That's not the point. If the aim is to subvert and to defile and to degrade and to degenerate, then actually they're quite successful. Again, if your aim is to destroy the economy and to make more people unemployed and to increase starvation, then a lot of what governments are doing right now makes sense. You just think, South Africa in 1994, we had 70,000 commercial farmers who were feeding 100 million people when our population was 28 million. So we were producing four times more food than we needed in our country. We could export. Today, we've got less than 30,000 commercial farmers who are feeding 40 million people, and we've doubled our population to 60 million. So South Africa now needs to live on imports. And what about the people we used to feed, that we used to export for? Now they depend on Ukraine's grain for some reason. I mean, Ukraine, that's a long way away. You know, it was better when it came from the Orange Free State. And now the grain comes from Ukraine, and now Ukraine's getting bombed and isn't able to ship things out. Is this stupidity, that you destroy your agriculture? So many countries used to export food, which now need to import food. But that's not stupidity. That's not bad planning. That's part of Agenda 21. They want to destroy people's self-sufficiency, and they want to make the whole world one big welfare state where everyone is dependent upon a state for everything. No independent transport. That's why part of Agenda 21's goal is to shoot up fuel prices to make private transportation unaffordable, because they want everyone to move into the inner cities where they can be controlled easy, where they won't have agricultural self-sufficiency, where they can be made compliant with what the government wants. These are the goals of the New World Order. And it's not our theory, it's what they've published.
Yeah, I'm quite an immersed kind of presentation. I mean, I felt like I'm not escaping these tendencies in the world today. I have three questions. The first is not really direct what you're saying, but from what you read in my letter before, verse 24, it talks about even the elect will deceive. And that brings me to conflict with the contemporary doctrine of election.
No, can I just say,
if it be possible. Yeah.
So it's almost hypothetical.
The elect would be deceived, but it's not actually possible.
I mean, for mentioning that, it's a possibility. If it was not something that would happen, there would not be a warning. A warning for supposed to be an eventuality. So I'm asking, what's the point of election? Yes. Someone says one seed for your seed in that context.
Okay, so consider this. At the when the Lord spoke to his disciples at the Lord's Supper, did I not choose you? Yet one of you is a devil. One of you is going to betray me. Before the cock has crowed, one of you will have denied me even. And they didn't all say, yes, Judas. Nobody guessed it was Judas. He was trusted. They, who can it be, Lord? Is it I? And they were confused. So Judas deceived everybody of the disciples, of the other apostles. It didn't mean they weren't the elect, but they were deceived for a time. Now, I think the idea is that the elect can be deceived at least for a time, but ultimately they will see.
Is this a salvation issue deceived in any case?
Well, that's not a salvation issue whether you recognize Judas was a traitor, but the point is we can be deceived about many things. We've all believed things that we found out later are not true. Now, of course, in terms of eternal matters, we would trust that no child of God can be deceived on a salvation issue. We would trust that that's the clear teaching of Scripture. But notice, the teaching on the elect is not teaching once saved, always saved. It's not teaching a token act of commitment means you're saved. It's saying the actual teaching is perseverance of the saints, that a true child of God, a regenerate child of God, will persevere to the end because God will enable him to persevere. Now, perseverance of the saints is a very different emphasis from this once saved, always saved idea where a person almost relaxes because we're told to work out our salvation with fear and trembling. And so we must fear God. There should never be the idea that we take anything for granted. We should be secure in God's love, but we should not be complacent. We certainly should never be entitled. I mean, that would never be correct. So deception, we can all be deceived. I mean, even the apostles of Christ were deceived as far as Judas's treachery goes.
All right, the second question is about the shop. I mean, when you made the presentation, I saw in kind of the different presentation around the idea of entertainment and politics. But I want to ask, I mean, being outlined in the context of this Sabbatarian, you know, flowing down into the contemporary world order, what is sports part of this program? Sports is part of this program. It's my curiosity. Mm-hmm. Right? The way, I mean, sports, the way footballers, the way boxers, the way, you know, contemporary sports, you know, practice and programs, the way it's taking the world, the way, you know, the influence, the impact on the youth, on people, you know, the affiliation, the fanism that's happening in that context. I want to find out if sport is also included in that program of totalitarianism.
Well, the Bible shows that that physical training is of some value, spiritual training is of great value.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of physical imagery that we must be like an athlete who strains towards them, who works according to the rules, who hardens his body so that he might win the crown. And so we are encouraged to be like a soldier dedicated to obeying his commanding officer, willing to sacrifice, like a farmer who gets up early, who sows the seed and prepares. And so there's a lot of these imagery which includes there's a place for physical sports. But the world has made an idol of everything. They've made an idol of sports. They've made an idol of entertainment, made an idol of politics. These things may have their place, but none of them should be elevated to idolatry. Idolatry is the most forbidden sin in the Bible. It's the most severely condemned sin. And the world today, where you can actually turn to sportsmen or actors, even more bizarrely, for advice on political, geostrategic, military matters, it's none of their business, and it's not the area of competence anyway. And the way how you've got this, it's literally a cult. It's an idolatrous cult built around, whether it's entertainers, musicians, sportsmen, politicians, not healthy. And you can see how it's all being used to deceive and distract people. I think the connection would be with the Roman Empire, while they were oppressing the people, and the Roman emperor had all the power, he distracted people with bread and circuses. So a bit of welfare and spectacular Colosseum events, which include feeding Christians the lions and so on. But that's blood sports, all sorts of things to distract the people. And I think Hollywood and sports are being used to distract the masses while the New World Order basically takes away our freedoms and attacks the church and so on. So I think it's more a distraction tactic. But it's also dangerous, idolatrous, almost like a competitive religion. For many people, their sports, their politics, their entertainment, or their music is more important to them than God.
All right, thank you for that. Then the last one is the reflections on what my neighbor here mentioned about the goats, the image of the goats. I was quite perplexed, you know, not that, I mean, it didn't really occur to my mind why we use the word kids for our children. So when I spoke with the lady, and she said, I don't call my children kids, I call them lamb. And we began to understand that. It dawned on me.
Very good point.
What's true? You have to call kids, the baby of a goat, to a human being. I know this is true. Right? So when
it's
you're
true.
Talking about the image of the goats,
yeah.
That's the reflection of the idolatrous, you know,
no.
Sectarian. What
very
do you
good
think
point.
Is the place of language in this? You know, because I mean, you know, we have
it
language,
your right.
language, you know. We had ruthless, you know. You have those things that apply to some event in history.
Yes.
And I'm using language. So what is, I mean, I was so, I mean, when they told me this, you know, I just said to myself, no, I don't have kids, I have labs, you know. But this applies to language, you know, implication,
yeah.
how you call them.
Yes.
And the outcome of that in their behavior, the level of, you know, the level of stubbornness and the level of, you know, naughtiness in the contemporary,
yes.
you know, evil environment. So it baffles me when you mention
yeah.
the goat image and the kids' language that we use.
It's true. I mean, where did we get the idea that our children were little goats? I mean, kids.
Yeah.
That's not exactly a biblical concept. And a shepherd can lead his sheep and they'll follow. But the goats won't follow. The goats will do their own thing. And so you can see that the Lord used the imagery of a sheep being a faithful, loyal, trusting follower as opposed to a goat who's rebellious, and going his own way, going astray. So the idea that suddenly our children have turned to being kids... disturbing. It's probably been popularized by Hollywood.
I'm just talking in my own language. That word goat is signifies stubbornness. Just telling you like a goat. This is my child, like a goat. Like derogatory. It's abusive.
It's a negative term.
Yeah, negative in implication. Like, you'll be a goat. So when I heard that, I that's quite not.
Well, I mean, just take the fact that, there's a lot of things you can take issue with about Hollywood culture. But the fact that they've gotten into the terms over all the years, for a while they were speaking about guys and gals. And before you knew it, it was guys applied to everyone, male or female.
Yeah.
And the fact that this is the beginning maybe of the gender confusion, gender blurring, unisex, and then before you knew it, LGBTQ, and then men competing in women's sports, and I mean, what else? But the whole goal, I remember when we published the book, The Pink Agenda, 21 years ago, and it was interesting that the conclusion was, the aim isn't so much to legalize homosexual marriage, it's to abolish all marriage. It's to debase all marriage. So the idea of, you don't get special benefits from tax or employment, depending on who you're shacking up with. The issue is about raising the next generation. So the idea was that parents raising children, the next consumers, taxpayers, citizens, needed tax breaks and help. And so when they managed to get that, oh, you had to get the same benefits because two homosexuals are together for a few weeks before they switch to the next partner, and all this charade, the aim wasn't that they wanted homosexual marriage. They just wanted to ridicule and debase marriage itself, to abolish marriage, which is one of the goals of the Sabbateans and of the Marxists. And you can see this now. They're trying to break down even the definition between male and female, and with, there's 60 or 70-something genders. But the fact now that you can literally have people standing back in confusion, not knowing how to challenge a man competing in women's sports, destroying the careers and lives of people who spent their whole life preparing for this, that just shows, what are they trying to do? The whole idea is to break down the whole distinction between gender. And the American army has gone further, where they force women and men to be in the same showers, bathrooms, in training, treating women like they're men. You can't do that. It's just not right. And anyway, for war, women are made to produce life and to raise life and to nurture, not to kill. For women to be involved in the nursing profession is one thing. For them to be involved in the killing profession is another. It's bad even for the men to get involved in what's often required in wars. But who have pushed the women into combat? Men who never even served. Bill Clinton, Barack Hussein Obama, draft dodgers and cowards who never served a day in a cadet's, let alone actually served in a combat zone. And they're the ones who've been pushing women to combat roles. That's reprehensible. And by the way, that's also something that I take issue with the State of Israel. State of Israel conscripts girls, teenage girls, and puts them into the army and trains them for combat. That is forbidden in the scriptures. The State of Israel is an antichrist state that is in rebellion to God in all areas. And that's why the Orthodox Jews today reject the State of Israel as anti-God and anti-Hebrew, because what they're doing is they've gone back to the land not in repentance, but in rebellion. And they're not going back to the land to institute God's law, but to violate all of God's law. So the Orthodox Jews are protesting against the State of Israel, while there's Christians worshipping and making an idol of the State of Israel, which is quite bizarre. By the way, on that, just consider, we have in Galatians 3:16, to Abraham and his seed, not to seeds as to many, but to one seed, which is Christ, was the promises made. So those who bless you, I'll bless, those who curse you, I'll curse, was not a promise made to a political state in the 21st century. It's a promise made to Abraham and to our Lord Jesus Christ. And it's in Christ that the promises are fulfilled. It's a messianic prophecy. People are blessed if they bless Christ. People are cursed if they curse Christ. Your eternal destiny hinges on your relationship to Jesus Christ. Not whether you support a political party in a state in the Middle East. So it's quite bizarre how people have made an idol of the state. And I think, again, everything is designed to distract you from Christ and God's will. And we must obviously be aware of all these things. Right, any other questions, comments? Alpha.
How today being called a sheep is basically negative. Well, we're talking about goats, kids, like goats is seen as something
yes.
good. And even on like Instagram and stuff, when you call someone goat, that means they're the greatest of all time.
Really?
Yes.
How did they get that right? That's a lot of brainwashing.
Yeah, goat, yeah, it was all time, that's true.
That's weird. That's very bizarre.
And then being a sheep means like you're very naive and stupid and all that stuff.
Huh. Well, of course, that's not a biblical imagery. The biblical imagery is that the sheep, they might sometimes be a bit stupid, but they're at least loyal and seek to follow the shepherd, as opposed to the goats who want to be rebellious and get into trouble and also chew up the roots while they're about it. Yes?
Speaking about deception and the degeneracy of Hollywood, do you see at least now with the whole technological age and a lot of leaks of video, especially now with the Disney and Netflix, where you see the agenda to push the LGBTQ agenda further in their programs, and with Netflix now telling their employees, essentially, if you don't like woke programming, you can leave. Because, and with the sort of the surge of comedians coming out against entertainment, that those people in entertainment are actually turning against their bosses and overlords. Do you say at least there's a shift that, well, let's say there's hope that at least in the degeneracy,
yes,
that people are in fact not Christians even looking at that saying, this is bad, what's happening
yes.
in Hollywood. You say at least there's hope.
Thank you for reminding of that. Yes, there is definitely hope. People are waking up in many areas. There are more than 7,000 who haven't bowed the knee to Baal. God always has his remnant who are faithful. And we do not need to fear. God has not given us a spirit of fear. And yes, I think they've overstepped the mark, and I think they've been overly confident. They've exposed themselves. Now we can see clearly what has been concealed for so long. And not everyone's on board. Not everyone likes this agenda. And you can see the very people who were shepherded is not the right word, stampeded into this Biden rebellion against Trump. There's a lot of buyer's remorse right now. A lot of people in America are very, very upset. Once the petrol has doubled the price and inflation is at all-time high and unemployment is at all-time high and so many things that are bad are high and so many things that are good are low, there's anger. And now we've got a genuine chance of nuclear war in Europe and Northern Hemisphere. And over what? I mean, this is insane. And there's a lot of people just saying no. And I'm pleased to see how many voices are speaking up. And the fact that there's now so many fact checkers and so much censorship and so much deplatforming shows that the masses are rising up. There's a lot of protest. No, the resistance to the masks, the resistance to vaccinations is very encouraging. The fact that many countries have had to just give up. Now, of course, you've still got the whole outers like Trudeau's Canada and Prison Island, Australia, New Zealand, they're still holding out, but a lot of other places are abandoning it. And South Africa, I don't see many people taking seriously what they're trying to force on us anymore. People have just lost interest. And I think the powers that be are scrambling. That's why they need a war in Ukraine. And they need something else, some other crisis, because people are not buying their propaganda as well as they used to.
I just want to add, because I think it was 2 weeks ago where the government said that somebody's pointing out that UFOs do exist, but that nobody cared. UFOs exist, because they're still thinking, well, inflation's still high. What is UFOs going to do with my problems here on Earth?
Yes, yes.
So it's again a distraction. Like, hey, there's UFOs exist, but
well,
nobody took notice.
Yes. And they, by the way, used a lot of the science fiction UFOs threats. And how many times you've suddenly had movies of aliens invading Earth to basically get you to forget about the fact that you've got some pretty wicked people hijacking the Earth from within. And it's a distraction. In America, they just tried to launch a Ministry of Truth where the government would literally vet what's true. And there's Ron Paul coming on so well, Rand Paul, and saying, who's been the biggest disseminator of fake news in the 20th century? And he says, the US government. You have given us, and he went through a list that was mind-boggling. It's true. They've lied about a lot of things going back a good century. And governments have been the biggest purveyors of lies, propaganda, and deception worldwide anyway. And then how can they be the determiners of what's true? And because we've had it in communist countries where they said, well, the Bible's not true. And the Bible's got to be banned, and churches have to be closed, and ministers shouldn't be allowed. And that's what happens. It's governments determine what's right and wrong and permissible, not permissible. We can't allow it. We don't want Zuckerberg to allow it either. Yes?
One of the biggest things, oversteps that they've been involved in, is going after the children.
Yes,
and
very bad.
In the state of Virginia, there was a guy turning the collar, he was a former governor, and a Democrat, he was running again. And he made the comment that the chief responsibility for the children wasn't the parents, it was the schools and the state. And he, a guy called Youngkin, was a Republican candidate. And this is a blue state, of course, and he won the governorship. Because he said, no, the parents, all the mama bears, and they all voted for Youngkin. And this is what's happened. I mean, they now have what they call a precinct strategy, where they are getting, they've got a database for every state and every precinct in the whole of the United States, where you as an individual can go in there, find out who the other people are who have these similar views, and you can go to school meetings and you can vote these people out. So there's been a tremendous, strong ground.
Backlash. Yeah.
Backlash.
Outstanding.
Because of the children and the outrage of what they're trying to indoctrinate these children with. And we've got to be careful here in South Africa as well.
Yes.
You know, that we could have this transgender
ideology there. They tried in 2020 to bring in what was called the sexual education, comprehensive sexuality education, CSE. They tried to bring it in, and there was a big revolt. But the trouble is, I think they then used the lockdown to get people to forget about it. They're going to try and bring it out again. So you've got to, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. We've got to be very, very vigilant. Make no mistake, you cannot trust any government with the moulding of the minds of future voters. And these sabotages are all over the place. They're not just in government and the UN and NGOs. They're in churches. They're in seminaries. They're certainly in Hollywood, that's for sure. But we've got to be alert. There's so much. When you see in the Church of England in Britain, they've turned some of these cathedrals into nightclubs, into putting helter-skelters in the middle of the cathedral, frivolous things, literally, what's it, putt-putt in the cathedrals. There's no end of garbage, and you've got these people dressed up in LGBTQ, and the local bishops has got multicoloured hair, and she's a trans, and these people are having a heyday. They love it, because it's not that they even believe what they're doing. It's just as they seem to break down everything that's Christian, that's family, that's civilization. This is a war against Christian civilization. As Jacob Frank said, the goal is to destroy Christian civilization. Because the God of the Bible is evil. I mean, that's their starting point. And now, when you understand that, so much of what's been done makes sense, because we've been trying to use logic and reason with these people. But it's not about logic and reason. It's that they are engaged in direct spiritual warfare. There's a hostility to God. And when we understand that, we know which way to come. We need to present them with the gospel straight forward, because many of them are in rebellion to God. And we need to be praying for God to judge many of these people and remove them. And replace them in the case of school boards. Good. Any other questions, comments?
Yeah, I want to find out from this LGBT discourse, is there any spiritual influence for someone to decide to be gay or something? Is it just a natural decision, or is there any powers of the spirit that will control disobedience? All right. Because I have a classmate that was my partner some years ago. So we met again this year, and I felt I'd only preached to him. He's gay, very healthy, handsome young man. But I didn't know he was. Let's see the color rings. And I thought, we had the conference together, so I said to him, let's talk about this interview. And we went talking, with Dr. Chan, because it was also for people hearing his identity. All of it I got from him. But that when he was young, he's African. He wasn't very familiar with the boys' sports, wanting to go for rugby, and the kind was interested in arts and music. And the family began to tag him. Are you sissy? Are you a girl? Why don't you? And they kept saying that until he felt that impression when he was in high school, exploring that, and now he's fully gay, and he gave me an idea that he feels that it was nature somehow, but I could tell that I was not really sure of that, it was just socialization, but I'm imagining, is there any spiritual
It is spiritual warfare, but there is a psychological component, there's a sociological component. There is bullying in schools, and there are sometimes bullying parents who can unnecessarily not recognize the way their child is and try and force on them something that they naturally, you know, I don't want to be a rugby player, I want to be an artist. And it, you can imagine there are some bad decisions made sometimes by teachers and parents, but there's also the seduction of the media, where they're trying to get anyone who's not happy with them and say, you know, if you just go over to the LGBT crowd, you'll be accepted and there's going to be love and self-fulfillment. And so a lot of it is how many media events and films and art and music is encouraging those sort of people to step away from the traditional and to find their fulfillment in what the world's offering, which is always a trap. It's a dead-end street. They're promising what they can't deliver. But there's a lot of dissatisfaction. Of course, I think in many cases, many churches have been unwise, and some families have been unwise in how they've dealt with these things. So we need wisdom, grace, love. If the church was doing its job, but we still know at the end of the day, nobody loves the children more than the parents. The state doesn't love my children more than I do. And the state doesn't know how to spend my money better than I do. And so the whole idea, listen, you know nothing. We, the government, we know everything. And we know how to spend your money better than you do, so just give us all your money. And we know how to look after your children better than you do because we care about your children more than you do. And there's a lot of people who believe that. They actually go along with, oh, well, the government says, then. But it's not their job to raise the children. It's not their job to tell us what the church or marriage or any or gender is. Their job's just to protect, punish criminals, protect lives and property, defend the country from external invasion. That's government's job. Leave everything else to the citizens and the church and voluntary communities. But the governments have been convinced by World Economic Forum and so on that their job is to remake everything because they know what's going on and their citizens are idiots. They don't know what's going on. Just let their elite run. And unfortunately, a lot of people believe this. And you know that Cyril Rinpoche is mentioned by Klaus Schwab, the head of the World Economic Forum, as one of his young global leaders, along with Justin Trudeau and Jacinda Arend in New Zealand and Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine. They're mentioned by name by Klaus Schwab, World Economic Forum, as the young global leaders that are going to remake the world. So to think that even South Africa's got a president who's mentored by Klaus Schwab, who's been trusted to shape this country the way the World Economic Forum wants it, that's a bit disturbing. Anything else? Yes, last question.
I was just curious about, what's the symbol of that all-seeing eye?
I'm sorry?
All-seeing eye?
Oh, the all-seeing eye. Yeah. I think the symbol of the all-seeing eye is it's on the American dollar bill. It's at the top of the pyramid and so on. And it's been understood to be an occultic symbol. And again, it's a single eye. It's very much a symbol of New World Order, of the Illuminati.
Is it the third eye?
It's like the third eye, in a sense, a spiritual eye. But interesting how that comes out in so many occultic images, the one all-seeing eye. And the Freemasons certainly adopt it. The Illuminati adopt it. The American dollar's got it. Has anyone got a better explanation? What is the significance of this? Is it that you don't trust the two eyes you've got, but you rather have the third occultic spiritual eye?
I know that it goes all the way back down to Founding Fathers of America. It's supposed to be representing God as overseeing basically the country and all the laws and such that they're agreeing. So it's, I know that it is originally a Christian symbol.
So you think it started out as a Christian symbol of the idea of all-seeing God,
yes,
but now it's been co-opted by the New World Order to suggest, you know, we know best. Or Big Brother's watching you kind of thing. Certainly, if you see the original Broadway Narrowway posters, they've got that eye, which is a bit disturbing to our modern sensibilities, but maybe previous generations, the 1800s, 1700s, didn't see it that way. Today, it tends to pretty much an occultic view, but it wasn't always that way. It's just like, for example, there were things that that in the past would have looked fairly harmless, which they've adopted now. If you said 50 years ago that he's a gay person, nobody would have thought it meant something about perversion, but it just means, you know, a gay person's a cheerful person, a happy person. And they hijacked the term gay, which isn't very accurate. They're not that gay, actually. Some of them can be quite malicious. And also, the rainbow. The rainbow was a beautiful picture for Sunday schools and the Ark and God's covenant, and suddenly it was hijacked by the LGBTQ. That's not what it used to be. Liberal didn't used to be a bad word. Liberals, do you know Ian Smith used to be a member of the Liberal Party? And I said to him, how could you be a member of the Liberal Party? He said, well, liberal back then meant what conservative means now. It means you believed everyone has a right to an opinion. But liberal has now become nobody's got the right to any other opinion except what we mandate. And so he started out his political career as a liberal and he ended out as a conservative. And he said it's not that he changes politics, it's that the names change their meaning. So, and I like that answer to Genesis is taking back the rainbow. Okay. It belongs to God, it doesn't belong to perverts. And so they're using the rainbow at the Ark Encounter, and I think that's the right thing to do. So don't let the enemy define the word. Don't let them hijack Christian symbols of the past.